The floor wheels, and she is afraid for a moment that she will go down. "Turtle?" Brett says. She gapes at them. Brett is talking to her, and Rilke is on her knees in front of Cayenne, patting Cayenne uncontrollably in a stymied impulse at more effective comforting. People are talking. It's on her, Turtle realizes, to get all of these people out of here, to get them to safety in case Martin is coming. It is dawning on her what a colossal mistake she's made. And she is, with a throttling and rising panic, trying to figure out what to do. "Turtle?" Brett says again. She just stands there. "Turtle, what's happening?" She walks to the bookshelf. Set beside a bookend is a clay jar full of pens, and she upends it, and taking out a Sharpie, walks to the wall and writes, "Get everybody out of here." "What?" Brett says. He stands staring at the words. "What?" She writes, "Run." A semicircle of strangers stares at her. "Oh no," Rilke says. "Like, now?" Brett says. "This is bad," Rilke says. Turtle gestures them out with the shotgun. "Wait," Brett says. "Why? How? We took everybody's keys." She gestures again with the shotgun, and even as she does it, she recognizes the futility. The house is full of sleeping people. Cars are choked in the driveway. She changes her mind. "I need to go," she says. "I need to get out of here." "Turtle, I can't understand you." She turns and drags Cayenne toward the door. If she hurries, she can set another ambush, just before the bridge. "Stop," Rilke says. Turtle looks at her. "You can't take her," Rilke says. Turtle puts her finger to her mouth. Everybody hesitates. "Brett, she's been..." Turtle gestures with the shotgun. Rilke cuts off. "Turtle, what the hell? Where are you going?" Brett says. Turtle is dead silent. She can hear a truck out in the driveway. She hears it shut off, and she hears him kick the door open. Hears the door slam. A numbness starts in her gut. A sucking, squelching, pins and needles awfulness, as if those goopy coils were rags being wrung of blood. Rilke is talking, her words meaningless and warped. And Brett, too, and the others, all of them talking. And Turtle is thinking, "He didn't let me go. He hasn't cut me loose. He waited for me to come back, like he did after he found out about Jacob. He gave me the opportunity to repent, because what he really wants is for me to come back on my own. But now he's come here. She has seconds to do the right thing, and if she does it wrong, people are going to die." "Shit," she thinks. "Shit." 28. Turtle shoves the girl toward Rilke. "Stay," she says. Cayenne shakes her head. Turtle takes a knee, level with the girl. "I'll come back." Her voice is a chapped rasp. The girl shakes her head. "Promise," Turtle mouths.
"You promise?"
Turtle nods slowly, painfully. To the others, she gestures up the stairs.
"Uh-uh," Brett says. "No way, I'm not leaving you."
"Brett," Rilke says. "Someone tried to kill her, and that person is here. That person is here right now."
"I don't care," Brett says. "I'm not leaving her."
"Brett!"
Rilke is holding on to Cayenne.
Brett, we need to go.
Turtle leaves them talking and crosses the living room and goes into the hallway, closing the door quietly behind her. She can hear Martin's footsteps coming up the deck. The hallway meets the entranceway at the T intersection, and she gets down on her belly so as not to be backlit by the hallway's display case, slithers across the carpet, noses the shotgun around the corner into the entranceway. The necking couple is still there, leaned up against the wall. The girl in the dinosaur onesie looks over at Turtle. She moves to brush a strand of hair from her face and then, recognizing the gun, freezes, opening her mouth. Turtle puts a finger to her lips. They stare at her. Turtle raises her eyebrows, looks to the door. They follow her gaze. Martin must be just on the other side of the door, standing on the deck. She hears the boards creak. The girl turns very quietly and looks back at Turtle. The shotgun is clearly not aimed at her. But there are some people who believe a shotgun can fill an entire hallway with buckshot. Turtle puts up her hand. Don't move. She is trying to say, stay where you are. She wants them to know she won't hurt them. The boy does not look away from the door. They wait. The low recoil rounds Turtle is using have about a third of an inch of spread per yard of distance. She's 5 yards from the door. Turtle thinks, come on. Come on. She waits, her guts uncoiling within her, tucked hard against the wall, looking around the corner with the gun laid out and herself half hidden beneath the end table. She welds her cheek to the stock. The carpet smells of some kind of shampoo. In the kitchen, the refrigerator cycles on. Turtle can see no shadow of him, but knows that he is just beyond the doors, and she waits, thinking, come to me now, you bastard. The doorknob turns, and the door swings open, a soft toss. The girl jerks in surprise and stays silent. Turtle's finger tightens on the trigger, but there is no shadow in the doorway, no sign of him. And she can imagine him hard against the edge of the open door, trying to draw her out. He seems to be deliberating. Come on, she thinks. Come on. The stock is slicked with sweat where it lies against her cheek. The sight bead glints. Dim yellow light from the deck fans across the tiles of the entranceway. Her mouth is dry with fear. She tries to swallow and cannot. The boy pushes away from the girl, takes a step toward Turtle, and Turtle shakes her head, mouthing at him, and he stops. Martin is capable of shooting through the door into the hallway, and he will, if he hears footsteps. He knows that Turtle might be waiting for him, and he will be sensitive to the dangers of trying to come in through the door. The boy hesitates. A silence drags on. The girl stands holding herself, shaking. The boy is partially in her line of fire, but she does not want him to move. The deck boards creak, and Turtle unwraps and rewraps her left hand where it lies on the pump. She is beginning to think she's missed something. The silence drags on too long. Turtle puts the shotgun stock against the floor and crutches herself up with it, thinking, no, no, no. She limps back toward the living room, supporting herself against the glass case. And as she comes to the living room door, a slash of light cuts beneath it. She knows what it is. Martin has walked around the side of the house and climbed up onto the deck and is panning his weapon light across the room, looking for another way in. And then she hears the hiss of the glass deck doors on their sliders and the double kiss of their seal. And Turtle thinks, shit, shit, shit. In the other room, just beyond the door, Cayenne screams. And Turtle can hear Martin's voice dimly through Cayenne's protracted, gasp-broken shrieking. But she stays where she is. Go through that door and die, she thinks.
Go through that door and you'll just fucking die. Cayenne's screams cut off.
Kibble,
Martin says. Turtle walks through the door. Martin is standing in the middle of the room. He is carrying his short-barreled AR-15, modified for full auto. Two 30-round magazines are duct-taped end-to-end. More magazines will be stuck behind his belt. His lips are broken open. Rilke is holding Cayenne.
What did you do?
He says. He spreads his hands. This occurs to her only now. There is no going back from this. Not with witnesses. Turtle opens her mouth. Cannot talk.
Kibble,
he says, pursing his lips. He holds his arms out. Turtle stands.
Right now, Kibble,
he says. He spits blood onto the white carpet. When Turtle does not speak, Martin looks around at them. He says,
Why doesn't everybody give us a minute?
The other high schoolers bolt for the door. Brett and Rilke stay where they are. Brett with his hands up, Rilke holding Cayenne. One of the others will be calling the cops. Perhaps somebody already has. Turtle is wondering, if she goes with him, what happens to Cayenne? Turtle tries to speak. Cannot. She swallows, tries again.
The girl,
Martin says,
leave her.
No, 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 Cayenne says. No, 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 he'll kill you. He's gonna kill her. Turtle is holding the shotgun one-handed, down by her leg.
Kibble,
Martin says. He walks toward her. He kicks the Monopoly board out of the way. He spreads his hands reasonably, the gun hung loosely from one, saying,
Listen, Kibble, listen. You have to come with me.
Cayenne is whimpering. No, 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 no. Martin says,
I love you too much to ever let you go. You made a mistake. You maybe forgot that we tried this already.
He smiles, falls silent, then gestures. Run up against some mute extremity of language.
We tried it, and what we found is that we are nothing apart. There is no going through that again. There just isn't. You have to see that. And these others?
He gestures again. Set pieces. Objects. That is her mistake. To believe in a world outside of him. He takes his last step toward her and pitches out onto his knees and wraps his arms around her, pressing his cheek to her pelvis. Brett and Rilke watch silently. Cayenne closing her eyes. Turtle lifts her arms like a girl waist deep in cold water. She thinks, kill him. Kill him right now. Do it before he kills you or Cayenne or Jacob or Brett. But she does not have it in her to kill him here on his knees. And she thinks, what would Brett think of you then? What would Cayenne think of you? A murderer, an executioner. And is this where it ends? Because she knows. It doesn't have to. He is talking, at least. Martin's shoulders jerk. He clenches her, closing his eyes so tightly that the corners crease, and he says,
I love you. Hell!
He tightens his grip even more. She doesn't know what to say. She looks over him at Brett in mute appeal, but Brett will not go. Martin's face is furrowed with intensity, and Turtle opens her mouth to speak and cannot.
Fuck!
Martin yells.
Fuck! Look at you! Fuck! Fuck!
He pauses, and in the silence he watches her. Then he rises.
Come with me, Kibble. She stands in place. Everybody, he says, get out.
No one moves.
Everybody, he says again, get the fuck out.
Brett says, no, man. No, I don't think so.
Martin turns to him. He says, you're Caroline's boy, right?
That's right, Brett says.
You better go ahead and get the fuck out,
Martin gestures with the gun,
before you get yourself shot.
Brett stands still, his hands up.
I can't. Sorry. She's my friend. You and me, Kibble. What do you say?
Turtle spreads her arms, empty, helpless.
Okay. Okay?
Don't go, Turtle, Brett says. We aren't letting this asshole take you anywhere. Martin considers her, one eye squinting more than the other.
I'll go, she says.
She does not know what she means.
She will go with him, or she will take him out into the hallway and kill him there.
She needs to get him away from Brett and Cayenne. He weighs her, nods to the shotgun.
Drop it.
She hesitates, tries to speak. Her voice breaks. She is weighing the chance that she drops the shotgun and he kills all of them. He turns away from her. He looks at the wall. He looks at the room. He purses his lips into a kind of speculative grimace and runs his hand down his face. He is trying to decide what to do. She says,
I'll come.
He smirks at her, knowingly, shaking his head. His smirk souring into something hateful, something bitter. Jaw-clenching and darkly speculative. He runs his thumb along his lips. He must see some expression in her face then, or he must make some decision.
Put it down, Kibble.
Turtle unslings the shotgun, pitches it to the floor. Brett steps forward. He says,
you're not taking her anywhere.
Martin ignores him. He's looking at Turtle. He says,
come on, Kibble.
Brett steps between them, puts his hand on Martin's chest.
No, he says, I won't let...
Turtle sees Martin's face. She goes for the Sig Sauer. Her right arm isn't working like it should. She bids for the gun desperately, and for one awful moment her shirt is in the way, bunching up over the holster's trigger release. And she can't get the gun up and clear. Scrabbling disbelievingly, watching Martin step back to make distance between himself and Brett. Brett's hands up and out, and then the bright muzzle flash. Brett arches forward, stooping, his back bowed out behind, and the bullet bellying his shirt like a sail. Martin looks past Brett at Turtle. She sees the second muzzle flash and the bullet hits her like a sledgehammer to the cheek. She falls, seeing stars, blind in the left eye, her face white with pain, lying right on top of her shotgun. Cayenne is screaming, breaking across the carpet toward her. Then Turtle is up and running, the shotgun in her hand. Something hits her low in the back and she sees the mist of blood projected ahead of her onto the wall. The puckered bullet hole appearing at its center, small as a cigarette burn. She crashes through the doorway and slews down the hall, her mind yellow and green with terror. She casts a look over her shoulder, and she sees a flare of light, like someone striking a match. Her vision patterning with green and red dots, a splattering of afterimages. And something smacks her just beneath the right shoulder blade. She hears the pock of gunfire. It seems smaller and less consequential than it should. And the sound follows after the blow. She falls onto hands and knees out into the kitchen. She grabs at her belly, the hot squirt of blood in her hands. She can hear the pock-pock of more gunfire, but it is utterly disorienting. She does not know where the bullets are striking, or if they are striking her. She cannot take a deep breath. She crawls across the kitchen floor, thinking, "You have to get up." She is gasping shallowly. Cayenne is pulling on her. Turtle plants her hand in a slick of blood, and it goes out from under her. She lies with her face on the granite tile. The girl drags at Turtle's shirt. Turtle can see the shotgun beside her on the floor. She rolls over on her back, pulls her knees up, drags the Sig Sauer out from its holster, and brings it up. Her aim is drifting all over the place. Her vision swims. Her left eye is full of blood, and she closes it. She braces her wrists between her thighs just as Martin comes into view. She fires, and he dives back behind the wall. She fires through drywall to drive him deeper into the hallway. Cayenne grabs Turtle by the arm and tries to haul her across the floor, and Turtle heaves herself up, boots and hands slipping on the blood-slicked tiles, picks up the shotgun, and hobbles toward the door, which opens onto the back deck. Then she stops. She looks at the kitchen counter, and then lurches toward it, supporting herself one-handed along the kitchen island, the other holding onto her stomach like a runner with a stitch, the shotgun slung, the blood glugging out through her squelching fingers. Her shirt is sopping. It makes an ugly smacking sound when it swings into her stomach. She can't take a deep breath.
"We have to go," Cayenne is screaming. "Turtle, let's go."
Turtle pulls the drawer open, and it's right there. Light bulbs, screwdrivers, finishing hammer, nails, duct tape. Blood is falling from her face into the drawer. She keeps blinking it out of her left eye. "It is just a scratch," she tells herself. It doesn't feel like a scratch. She pulls her shirt up. "It's okay," she's telling herself. "All you have to do is do everything right, and that's just fine." Martin comes around the corner. Turtle lifts up the bloody shotgun one-handed and blows a hole in the wall just as he falls back. He sticks the gun around the corner and fires blindly into the kitchen, hosing the walls with automatic fire. And Turtle aims and fires again. The buckshot goes through the tile, exposing studs and electrical wires. Insulation exits out the wall, and she hears the shattering of the glass case. Hears him scrabbling through the glass away from her. She swings the gun up and shoots out the kitchen light. They plunge into darkness. Then Turtle thumbs on the gunshot's weapon-mounted strobe. The room fills with blinding, flickering illumination. It flattens all the shadows into harsh, depthless lines, and all color into white sheets of glare. She knows from experience just how hard it is to shoot into that strobe. The weapon light is mounted on the barrel with quick-release tabs, and she dismounts it and rolls it across the kitchen island, 10 feet away from her and aimed at the hallway door. In the nauseous, flashing light, she hitches her shirt back up. She can see the wound in her belly. The blood has sheeted down her stomach, and her jeans are sodden with it, and it sloshes in her boots. She tears off a strip of her shirt, wads it over the hole, and begins duct taping over it. She is lucky Martin is using a short-barreled rifle. By the look of the exit wound, she's been skewered right through, the bullet not fragmenting or yawing at all. With longer barrels and higher velocities, those 5.56 bullets can peel apart or tumble. "He's careless," she thinks. "He's careless of these details, and he always was." Martin is firing at the flashlight. Turtle ignores him. The duct tape is not going to do much good, but it'll do something. That's not true. Where she's going, it's going to save her life.
"Turtle!"
Cayenne screams. Turtle ignores her, taping up around her stomach and up around her chest, a tight duct tape girdle. Something flashes and Turtle looks up. The granite backsplash beside her ejects and lifts from the wall in shards. In the strobe, there is no movement, just single, bright white flashes. He's no longer shooting from the doorway. He's in the adjacent room, shooting through the wall right beside her. Turtle dives, bears Cayenne to the ground. Above them, splinters of tile and glass are constellated in the air. A scroll of particulate grit blooms outward. The girls huddle on the floor behind the island. Cayenne is screaming and screaming, face to the tile. The kitchen island isn't actually cover. The 5.56 rounds may be small, no bigger and only slightly heavier than a .22 rimfire, but they'll still go right through it. Turtle sits up, braces herself against the cabinet, and continues wrapping the duct tape around herself. She doesn't want to try firing back at him through the wall. She just doesn't have enough ammunition, and she doesn't know who might be in the room with him. Then the firing stops, and Turtle hears him drop the magazine. The sound of the new mag loaded into the well. The steel-on-steel sound of the bolt released forward. But something goes wrong. It is a jam. "You motherfucker," she thinks. "You incompetent fuck." Probably, he'd done a shitty job of retooling the gun for full auto, and it's jamming up on him. Cayenne is plastered to the floor, eyes clenched tight, convulsing wordlessly and clawing at the tile. Turtle grabs her by the hair and heaves her up, and the girl seizes Turtle's wrists in both hands and they stagger to the deck door. The strobe destroys all depth perception, and so they reel, half-blind, through the room, and Turtle fires into the doorframe ahead of them and kicks it open and steps out. More fire searches the kitchen, and they pitch out on the deck and crawl awkwardly out toward the stairs. The strobe will hold him for another few seconds. Turtle grabs the railing and drags herself down onto the stairs, and they descend into the rocky notch of beach covered in dried bull kelp that cracks hollowly underfoot. A stiff wind comes from the north, and it picks up their hair and pulls it in streamers across their faces. 29. Turtle walks with difficulty, her footsteps wringing water from the wet sand into shining halos. Ahead of her, the river is lined with sleeping geese. There look to be hundreds. Turtle blunders forward, leaning on the girl. Lurch and step, lurch and step. The duct tape is squeezing in time to her heartbeat, and she realizes the roll is still attached to her, hung on a long tail of tape. She runs several more passes around her stomach, tears the roll off, and drops it to the sand. She is breathing in quick, hard pants and cannot seem to get enough air. The bluffs are not high. The river runs beneath them for another 25 yards, and then the bluffs fall back. Beyond the bluffs, the river's shallow estuary is strewn with driftwood logs, sandbars, and stranded heaps of bull kelp, 40 yards to the tide line, where three sea stacks stand in black outline. The breakers shattering white and rolling in across an expanse of beach that spans the horizon from north to south. Each wave barreling a freight of water and sand that shakes the air. Above her, Jacob's house, sitting on the corner of the bluffs, overlooks both the river and the beach. Turtle and Cayenne stagger forward, and the flock begins to take flight all around them. Turtle reaches the river's edge and drags the girl forward into the cold water, slogging thigh deep through a confusion of beating wings and pitching into the current. Then Turtle lets go and swims hard across the sandy bottom. The river is only 6 or 8 feet deep, but it carries her along with surprising force. She breaks the surface for air once, geese still taking flight all across the river, the house obscured from view. And she dives and swims again. She swims out past the bluffs, reaches a driftwood log that juts from the bank into the water, grabs a hold of it, and comes up behind it. She drags the girl out of the current and into the leaning, chiseled face of the riverbank behind the log. 40 yards away, Martin comes out onto the deck and pans the weapon light across the beach, the light cutting slant through the river's surface. Dappled reflections carousel across the cliff face. Turtle and Cayenne lie behind the log, chin deep in water, sheltered against the sandy bank. He has a small height advantage. The deck is 20, 30 feet up and overlooks the entire beach. She has nothing in the shotgun but buckshot. He is right at the limit of her range. If she had a slug, she could reach out to him on those steps and end his life just like that. Her thoughts are coming to her slowly, the edges of her vision closing in, the world hollow and drained of sensation. She grabs the girl and points her downriver, and Cayenne shakes her head. It's another 20 or 25 yards to where the river meets the ocean. She wants the girl to follow the river to the sea and then strike south along the tide line. It's her best chance. Turtle holds up 3 fingers. In 3. Looking at the girl meaningfully, and the girl shaking her head, and Turtle drawing her close and kissing her hair, and then pushing her away, and both of them breathing ragged, and the sound of their breathing seeming magnified by the water and by the chiseled sandbank, and Turtle turns and draws the Sig Sauer with water draining from the magazine and from the barrel, lays it across the log, finds the glowing tritium sights, picks out Martin with his light searching the beach, and she fires. Martin must see her muzzle flash, because the weapon light swings across the beach toward her, and he begins firing back. Water spouts jump into the air and flare black, and nebulous against the weapon light's sun-like apparition, and wood chips geyser from the log and are raptured into the dark. Turtle aims right back into that annihilating glare. The shadows of her gun sights sundial across the gun slide and across her arm, and the Sig Sauer eclipses the light and casts its slim shadow back onto Turtle's right eye. The sights themselves haloed in shining white light, and she pulls the trigger. The light blinks out. Turtle continues firing, minutely attentive to the click of the trigger reset, her vision washed with afterimages. The Sig Sauer locks open, and she drops it into the river, the gun hissing and then gone. She closes her eyes, consciousness slippery in her hands, and she thinks, "You have to get up, Turtle. You have to get up." Cayenne is gone. That, at least, had worked. The girl got away. Turtle crawls on elbows and knees through the water along the sandy bank, barely able to remember what she is doing. The river shallowing out around her as it broadens. Ahead of her, a mound of bull kelp lies islanded in the river course. Turtle slithers toward it, belly down. There is a sandbar here, heaped with kelp and driftwood. She crawls up into kelp. Flies and sand fleas startle up from it around her. It smells of salt and of rot. She is taking fast, uncontrollable gasps, dragging the shotgun on its sling. She lies shaking with cold and with fear. Beside her, a crumpled jellyfish with purple skirts, limbs in ropey tangles, the hollows crawling with sand fleas swollen and magnified by the lens-like flesh. The water is brackish. The river current trades with the waves, changing direction back and forth. The surf rolls on toward her with a cacophonous grind palpable in the water and in the sandy bed below, palpable in her guts, which wallow in their ruptured and mucilaginous sac, each breaking waves sending a swash of water that rises around her and then drains. She lies scooping after oily thoughts like raking through seaweed for eels, thinking, I could close my eyes, and this, all of this, would be over. Then she thinks, no, fuck that. You had your chance, you cunt, and you're in it now. Turtle eases up and looks through the kelp at him. Martin is limping down the beach beside the river course, and Turtle experiences a terrible surge of joy. She'd hit him, the fuck, at however many yards, and her with a 9mm, and him with the AR-15, on higher ground and with the flashlight blinding her, and she'd hit him. She'd hit the flashlight, too, or else he'd be using it. Come to me, she thinks. Come to me in the dark, you fuck. Come to me and die. She eases into the water, which rises up around her eyes, and she pulls herself deeper into the heavy, oily tangle of kelp. It takes him a long time to make his way down the beach, and she lies unmoving, her heart clenching her whole body with its beat, panting, dizzy, and she thinks, just a little bit longer now, Turtle. Hold tight to the world and do not let go and do not fuck this up. Martin is following the river's edge. It must appear to him that there is no hiding on this vast, flat, expansive beach. He stops abreast of where she lies in her kelp heap. He, like her, is waiting for his eyes to adjust to the dark. He watches the river for any movement, peering in the attitude of people who cannot see well in the dark. The gun is up against his shoulder. The shotgun is trapped underneath her. She doesn't want to move to pull it free. She wants him to walk by. She will move if she needs to, but she doesn't like her odds. She wants him to walk past. He keeps looking away toward the river's mouth, where the three islands stand in the surf. Still, he doesn't want to have the kelp heap at his back. Turtle closes her eyes. No, she thinks. He raises the gun and fires, searching the kelp heap with automatic fire. Turtle lying with eyes closed, teeth gritted, the wet smack of the bullets into the kelp. But nothing happens. He doesn't hit her. He stops firing and studies the kelp heap. Then he makes his decision. He swings the gun toward the surf and walks by. Turtle exhales hard, putting her knuckles to her mouth to keep from sobbing. Then she pulls herself slithering from under the kelp, the sandy shotgun dragging free, and she rises to her feet and limps after him through the shallowing river course, thinking, not much farther, Turtle. All you have to do is keep your feet under you, you bitch. It is lurch and step through the shin-deep water. Lurch and step. And it feels like God has taken her by the abdomen and is squeezing her. The beach drained of color, drained of smell and of sound. A black and white sheet, the white of the waves, the silhouettes of the islands, and Martin. Ahead of her, he approaches a narrow corridor between two islands, cave-like and winding. He thinks she is there, holed up ahead of him. Turtle's vision is tunneling down to a single, determined thought. He stands at the margin of the tide, knee-deep in water, facing the ocean. The moon is ahead of him and backlights him. It is touching the horizon's edge. She lifts the shotgun, shedding water from the magazine tube, and does not know if it will fire.
"Daddy," she says softly from behind him.
And he swings around, and the night dials apart with the helicoptering strobe of the muzzle flash. Turtle pulls the trigger. Her own muzzle flash makes a three-quarter corona of light broken by the silhouette of the shotgun, and a great lance of fire reaches out to him, and she sees his shape and then darkness. She never sees him fall. The sound of the shotgun rolls across the beach. Everything extinguished. Gone. The after images white and green and red, each retaining the impression of color. But each of them as dark as black. She pitches onto hands and knees and crawls toward him, puts her hand on his leg. His jeans are soaked and crusted with sand, and she takes hold of his shoulder and drags him toward her. His hand, enormous, calloused, covered in sand, clenches at her, and his strength is just like she remembers it. She hauls him into her lap and sits stooped over him, hot and alive in the cold water, his labored breathing twinned with a suckering squelch. Turtle puts a hand on his face and holds his jaw. His mouth opens spasmodically, and she thinks he will talk. He will say something now. But he just gasps, sucking air through a pit in his chest, and she covers it with her hand and feels the wound draw flush against her palm, and he drags in a breath. She thinks that he will speak, but he does not speak. She says, "I love you." His legs kick in the sand, some reflexive twitching motion. And when the wave breaks over them, his body lifts in her arms, the water dragging at their clothes, sucking the sand out from under her, leaving them half buried in the wet dregs. His jaw moves, and then he says over and over again,
I.
But he cannot get past this first word, and she can see the enormous tendons of his neck, the grain of the flesh, dark freckles, stubble, snaking veins thick as her fingerprints, the apple of his throat like a hard knot, the two cords that stand out like cables on either side of the hollow, and whatever else he would say is swallowed in the roar of the tide, and he wraps his hands around her wrists to fight her, and she drives the blade down through the leathery skin. The coarse white strings of tendons flash once, and a spume of blood is thrown up and across her face, and his back tightens and he arches up, his hips rising off the sand, his trachea gaping black beneath the blade. And then another wave breaks over them, and she can feel the hot underwater jets of blood. The blade lodges against some hard knot of bone, and she drags the knife forward and back, and it breaks through his neck and down into her own thigh. And she is sitting now in a hot pool of blood in the slack moment before the wave retreats. The moon shining through the gap between the islands, holding Martin still underwater, his fingers opening and closing convulsively as he struggles. The hot arterial pumping stirs the surface. She tries to draw the knife from his neck and cannot. She hauls on it, gritting her teeth, and still cannot pull it free. Then the wave retreats, and she can see his blood running in great black ropes across the wet sand. She bends over him, and he is irretrievably gone. It is his same body in her arms,
and she takes hold of his flannel shirt. And it is his flannel shirt, his sodden jeans, his boots sticking up out of the sand. But he is gone from her. Cayenne comes toward her from the dark alley between the islands and drapes her arms around Turtle's neck and puts her cheek against Turtle's shoulder, and Turtle lets her, but will not and cannot take her hands off him. Cayenne pulls at Turtle's shirt, and Turtle looks up, out at the beach. The waves fold onto the sand, and the moon touches the water's surface. And she thinks, the hell, isn't that something? 30. Turtle sits on the edge of a raised garden bed, the forest quiet around her. The redwoods 18 to 36 inches through the centers, second growth from the burls of huge, duff-filled stumps, the biggest of which were long ago burned to ash-scaled cauldrons 15 feet across. Indian pipe, sword fern, and madrona grow at the edge of the clearing. Above it sits Anna's cottage, big, south-facing windows, homemade stained glass in the kitchen, and a dream catcher in the second-story bedroom, roof covered in solar panels, the building and land inherited from Anna's grandmother. The forest has been crowding in closer and darker since the house was built. Sitting on the deck's balustrade, Anna's cat, Zaki, looks down at Turtle and lids and opens her pale blue eyes approvingly. Turtle digs her gloved hand into the soil of the raised bed, rich and black from a recent rain. She doesn't have to dig far before she finds the roots. She gets down on all fours. The bed is on 6-inch concrete risers. A crooked finger of feeder roots has climbed out of the earth, following the trail of the dripping water, crossed the open gap between the earth and the bed, and snuck in through one of the drainage holes. Turtle began gardening 8 months ago, hampered in every movement by pain and by her ileostomy bag. One of the bullets took her low in the back, passed between two intercostal arteries, perforated her jejunum, and exited out her lower left side. Another scraped her left cheekbone, and the third glanced off her seventh rib on the right side, just below the scapula. The rib punctured the pleural sac around her lungs, and as that pleural space filled with air, her right lung began to collapse. "Just a small pneumothorax," Dr. Russell had said, thumb and forefinger minutely apart to indicate its size. Just a small one. Dr. Russell was a thin man, with pale skin blotched with blemishes, balding, quiet and careful. He'd lean in while he talked, pinching thumb and forefinger together as if capturing the texture of her voice, and he'd ask again, "Why'd you think to tape it up like that, Turtle?" And Turtle would shake her head, because she didn't know. And he'd smile and lean back. He was excited by her case and by her injuries, which Turtle liked. He loved this part of his job. She could tell. The contents of her small intestine had spilled into her abdominal cavity, and after the first stabilizing operation, there had been two major surgical procedures to clean out infection. If her duct tape bandage hadn't held, Turtle might not have survived at all. Seawater, Dr. Russell liked to say, is nasty stuff. Her survival amazed him. The surgeons brought a loop of gut up to the skin on her right side, above her groin, which made a puckering red asshole in her hip. And for 6 months, she shit out of that, or really, dibbled through it. A flexible adhesive patch with a gasket was placed over the stoma, and the ostomy pouches snapped onto it. Turtle would wake up in the middle of the night, clawing at the flange where the pouch met the base plate, and one night she'd almost succeeded in pulling it off. Woke up just in time
and staggered out to the bathroom and stood at the sink, imagining herself yarding out a foot of pink intestine through a keyhole in her side. Stood clutching the bathroom counter, panting with pain, looking in the mirror and shaking her head. And she'd thought, Martin tried to tell you. He tried to tell you that one day you would need to be more than just a scared little bitch with good aim. That one day, you would need to be absolute in your conviction. That you would need to fight like a fucking angel, fallen to fucking earth, with your heart absolute. And you never got there. You were full of hesitation and prevarication right down to the end. She stood at the sink thinking, you were never enough, and you never will be enough. That day, she'd waited for Anna to come home. And when Anna opened her car door, Turtle said, I want to make a garden. And Anna had stood, holding her banker's box of tests to grade, slack with exhaustion, leaning back against the Saturn. And then she'd put the box back inside, and Turtle had gotten in the passenger door and closed it with the bungee cord. Together, they'd lifted redwood 2x12 boards out in Rossi's lumberyard and inspected them for knots and turned them on edge to look for warp and set aside the boards that they liked. And then a big-bellied man with jeans and a flannel shirt and measuring tape suspenders cut the boards into 8-foot and 4-foot lengths. And still looking at Turtle, he'd taken off his gloves, slapping them into his left palm, and he'd extended his right hand. The man's ungloved hand was very large, and he gripped hers firmly, almost painfully. They went inside to the hardware desk to pay for the boards, and for the galvanized nails, and for the potting soil they'd purchased, and there had been a woman behind the desk with her hands planted on the counter, chewing gum impressively, bleached blonde with dark brown roots, and wearing a fluorescent orange vest. Cindy, her name tag read. She stared at them. Anna had toted up their board feet in a small notepad she carried in her back pocket, carried everywhere because she was making notes for a novel she meant to write, and never knew when an idea would come. Taking out the notebook now, she said, 8 12-foot redwoods, 2x12s. The woman said, punching it in. 8 bags premium potting soil. The woman said. 1 pound galvanized nails. The woman said. And the way she said it made Anna look up at her, every time, curious if the woman was hostile. That's it, Anna said. The woman said. She put her hands down on the counter and leaned forward. Well, Anna said, taking out her wallet. How much do I owe you? No charge, the woman said. No charge, Anna repeated. The woman said. For the redwood boards? The woman said. There was nothing inviting or kind about the way she said it. I'd like to pay, Anna said. She held her wallet open in her hands. The woman said and nodded. So how much do I owe you? No charge, the woman said. I don't understand. The woman said. You can see that I want to pay, right? The woman said. So, Anna said, I insist, how much do I owe you? The woman leaned her bulk forward onto her counter, propped her elbows up. She was broad through the shoulders. Her cleavage was leathery red and suntanned. She said, This is a small town. It don't always feel like it, but it is. You aren't paying for that lumber. Well, thank you. Anna said. Nuh-uh, the woman said. Don't thank me. She'll need more soil than that, and it won't all be free. Well, thanks anyway, Anna said. Cindy watched Turtle and Anna on their way out the door. Anna just shook her head. They'd arrived at North Star Nursery as it was closing. The place was locked up, and a young man in a green sweater and jeans and muddy work boots was walking to his truck when they pulled in. He watched them, and then approached Anna Saturn as she parked and got out.
Anna?
He'd said. And Anna had said, Tim. And they'd hugged, and then he looked at Turtle and he said,
So this is her.
And Turtle looked out west, to the clouds above the ocean. She wondered where Cayenne was right now, and if she was safe. The girl had gone to live with her aunt. Turtle had spoken to the woman on the phone, had said, I want to talk to that girl every week, and I want to hear in her fucking voice that she is okay, and I will know if she isn't. And the woman had paused, and then she'd said, All right. Said it mockingly and sullenly both, dragging the word out with a passive-aggressive resignation. And there was something muted and superior at the end there, as if she thought Turtle were ridiculous. It was just the way Cayenne had said it, when the girl had been at her most sullen, and the shock of recognition had gone right through Turtle, had taken her right back to standing above the girl, with Cayenne lying on the floor reading, trying to get her to go out looking for scorpions. She knew that it was a bad home the girl was growing up in, but what could she do? It was not as if Cayenne had been safe with her. Tim let them back into the nursery, and Turtle took a little red wagon and dragged it around while Tim and Anna stood beside the gate, talking. The nursery had a fenced yard with slat-topped tables, covered in black plastic seating trays and containers. It was early evening, and the sky was purple. Turtle rolled her little red wagon through the nursery's gravel walkways. Tim wanted to come over and talk to her. It was in his posture. But he stood with Anna by the fence and watched. People expected that she would not like to talk to men, but that wasn't true. She lifted the black plastic trays of sugar pod snow peas, loving their rich green leaves, the black soil. Holding them to her chest and looking over the tables and tables of plants, it felt like anything was possible. There was an entire table of lettuces in 4-cell packs. Drunken woman frizzy-headed lettuce. Butter crunch. Mascara. Flashy butter oak. She wanted kale and chard and the sugar snaps and garlic and artichokes, and she wanted beds of strawberries. She wanted it all. It was mid-February and still cold. But Anna thought you could plant lettuce year-round where she lived. Artichokes or snow peas would do well. Any of the crucifers. Better to wait if she wanted to plant tomatoes. They paid for the plants inside. Tim squinting over Turtle's red wagon and, with difficulty, keying the numbers into a register, sometimes consulting sheets of laminated paper. Turtle had a scar across her left cheek. A thick keel of numb tissue, and she touched it absently when she was speculative. There were decorative plants and water features inside, but all the pumps and lights were off. Anna and Turtle stood together by the register. On the counter in front of them was a black and white flyer of Turtle walking out of the waves, leaning on Cayenne and holding the shotgun. Turtle did not remember walking off the beach. This one read, Support Turtle Alveston. The picture was taken by one of the paramedics. The poster was curling, stained by some freshly watered plant that had dripped down the counter. She had been shot, people liked to tell her, 3 times, saved everybody at the house that night, and walked off the beach of her own power. She was a hero. They loved that about her. You walked off that beach, people told her.
Doctors, nurses, techs, strangers. Brett, when he visited her, had said it.
You're a hero, Turtle.
In his hospital gown, sitting in a wheelchair with the nurse there,